people have their area of strength and weaknesses. Somebody who's already studied agriculture in school, you know, is likely to do more than somebody who studied something else and trying to learn as a product manager to go and fit in agricultural space.
Would
you rather play to your strength and gain profit from there, or...
Hi guys, my name is Charles Bourne and this is Secret Behind the Scenes. And today's episode is quite interesting because you guys know I'm a serious person, you know, like this life. But my producer is like, you know, you have to be serious today. And I said, why? And she's like, let's talk about technology and education. I'm like, what? Girl, bye. But I don't have a choice, right? I have to sit down and do this. I promise you won't sleep because our guest is quite an interesting person. I feel like anybody who has, you know, what's the word now, who has spoken on any TEDx platform whatsoever is an interesting person, because every TEDx speaker that I've really encountered, they have their words and they're quite, you know, vibrant and whatnot. And today we're talking about, like I said before, technology and education. And my guest today is, you know, an expert in that field. I'm just going to let him just drive the conversation because honestly, I am clueless about this. So. When it comes to music, fashion, movies, you got me. But anything that has to do with serious book, dear,
right.
I'm not there. I have with me today in the studio, buddy Maxwell. Welcome.
All right, Charles. Thank you so much.
I will sang your name to show you that I'm not a serious person.
This is about to get so interesting.
Welcome.
Okay. Thank you so much, Charles. Hello, viewers and listeners. I'm really excited to be on this show behind Secret Behind the Scenes. And I think to start with, maybe I'm still a little bit nervous, but then, I mean, as we go into the whole conversation, definitely I would, you know.
Oh, yes. You will relax. See how you just started doing intro for me? Like, it's my I'm the presenter. You are the guest. Relax.
Okay,
anyways,
right.
Technology education is something that, like I said, I'm clueless about, right? And before the cameras came on, we were chatting, and you had said that there's a thin line between technology education and technology and education. So please, first off, school us on what both of them are, which is like your area of like specialty, and then what the thin line is.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Charles. You know, they're just, you know, play of words, honestly. Mm-hmm. And then, but then to break it down, I would say that for me, I pride myself as a technology education expert who has been in the space for about, I would say, 5-6 years, you know, actively different experiences across different problem solving skills. In terms of technology education and tech and education. Technology education is simply the study of technology, you know, just bringing teaching or teaching students about all the processes that involves in bringing together a technology that works.
Okay.
You know, the understanding to be able to fix problems that are related to tech and be able to drive solutions to problems using technology. All of the understanding that has to do with the know-how and the technical know-how of that is what we can regard to as technology education.
Right.
But, you know, technology and education.
Mm.
We mean that technology in itself is, we use the word an enabler.
Okay.
So which means that technology is something that just drives a certain solution to a specific problem, you know,
okay.
Technically.
Okay.
You know, education definitely is the process of learning, you know, understanding, and then the application of this understanding and knowledge to become wisdom of that particular thing, which then forms you becoming a professional in that space, or, you know, we can use the word as an expert in that space.
Right. So, and then your area of specialty is technology education?
Yeah, well, I'm an expert in technology education, but I play in the field of technology
and education.
And education. In technology, I'd say I'm, you know, I'm a product manager. You know, I've worked in different roles regarding that. And in education has been something I've been a driver of education for quite a long time. Anything that just brings anyone from point A to B and then just brings them into a limelight of doing something differently.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so passionate about that. So as a technology education expert, I also play in the field of technology and education, depending on which side of it I am in.
So when I speak to people, you know, like you, that are really like that sound really smart, I'm really excited. But I just want to know, I just typically want to go back memory lane or down memory lane with you, right? Growing up, were you the first position type student or people in class?
Well, growing up for me, quite interested. I mean, I used to say that I don't want to be emotional, yeah. right? But then my growing up wasn't that easy. I mean, was clueless. The kind of family or background where I came from, not to talk too much about it. It's psychologically draining. So I would say that at every point in time, to answer your question directly, I'd say I've been a brilliant student. I mean, from the records, report cards, and all the things that I used to do growing up. But at different points, the confidence to live in the reality of who I was wasn't really there, because, of course, I didn't have what I would say a direct, example in my very close vicinity at the time of the kind of person I wanted to become. Right. Yeah, this is not a shade on my family, but it's just being...
No, I had a dead-ass father, too, so it's okay.
Right? Yeah. So it's very terrific. So at every point, I needed to look at people who were within my community, not in my family, because nobody just looked like who I wanted to become. Yeah. So I would at different point, I wanted to become different things. At first, I wanted to be an aeronautic engineer. I wanted to be a doctor, just because I thought that doctors at the time could earn a lot of money, mm-hmm. and then I could take care of my poor mom, mm-hmm. right? So different reasons for wanting to do things I thought that I would be smart at without really knowing exactly what it was. Mm-hmm. But then I was acing my books, right? I was reading, passing exams, and of course, I think I graduated from being... like I said, psychological draining. Mm-hmm. So at some point had family issues that could disturb any young person in school. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I graduated from that. Over time I was able to, I didn't know how it happened, but I would just say it's God's grace. I cut my shit together and I was really, acing my class. I would say that I've been the first position in the entire, school. And I've represented my school in different jet club, even as a primary school pupil at the time. So I'd say that, considerably, I've been a smart guy.
Would you say, I'm sorry that I'm, taking it back, right. But would you say that acing your studies was somewhat a coping mechanism for you based off on the psychologically draining issues that you were going through per time?
Yeah.
Was it an escape route for you?
So, yeah, it was. I would say that many of the things that I do today, I've drawn inspiration from the very family ecops of that, right? I wouldn't say you don't need bad situations to do good things.
Of course.
But I would say that, my bad situations have actually been contributory to the things that I am today. My dad was a civil servant. He's currently retired civil servant and worked with the Nigerian Police Force. Mm-hmm. And then, all these shenanigans with police officers who, not to go into details.
No, let's go. We're here for it.
Yeah, well, okay. So I would say that I grew up with a dad who, felt like, all through his service here, he had to do the whole hackwall, smoking so that he can get active. While he is working, bad company and all those things, and it did affect our family. My mom struggled, my dad, you can imagine, as a kid, seeing people just coming together over your dad just because he's drunk, it probably being in one portal. Right, and then you see flies around him, or he misbehaves. He can be in uniform, and then he's just so disoriented. Right, it became something of shame, and then I didn't have a lot of friends. I couldn't even make friends because I was always thinking that, what if I'm playing football or playing games with my friends and my dad shows up? So probably just at the time when I was growing up, you always find me in the room. Studying my Macmillan English, right? Just reading, trying to just, Before age 13, I used to not really, I mean, I used to see all the things that happened, but then I was so sad about, just sad about as a you know, as a kid. You didn't really understand why would your dad behave this way, exactly, and all those things. But it would affect you, because by the time you're passing in the community, you know, you're the older ones are like saying, you know, that's the son of that man that, you know, the drinks and all those things. So it affected, because I grew up with two sisters, and I would say that it took a toll on them than it did me. I don't know how I did it, how I coped, but I would say, to answer your questions directly, it would mean that, you know, those times, I also thank God, because I found Jesus. I won't say, this is not a spiritual platform, but I would say that at the time, you know, I was this church boy, right? And then I was happy to be in a community of some missionaries who, I mean, I attended the Baptist church. My parents don't really go to church at the time. So those things, you know, I found like good examples in the church at the time, and then I even thought I was going to be in a seminary school, right? But clueless, you just thought that because some things are giving examples of being a good person, you want to look like them, but then not, you know, answering to the deeper things within you of who you are exactly. But I found my place over the years. So I'll say that many of the things I've done, I've been through trying and failing at it and realizing that this is not for me, then I'm trying something else. So I grew up, I wouldn't say, I wasn't alone, but I was lonely, right? So yeah. I was this guy who would just, I mean, brilliant guys, have friends in school, have friends in community. They know me, that guy is just working, you know, home by himself. But then you wouldn't really see me, my friend visiting me at home. You wouldn't see me go being too intimate with people, because I just really don't want to let people in too much, such that I don't have to, you know, feel bad for having a certain family issue or something. So what I just do is, I see an example, I want to look like it, I, you know, find a way, or ask questions. You know, I was quite shy, but I really always ask questions. If somebody looks like who I want to become, or is doing something good, I would, you see me asking questions. And then from asking questions, you know, being a part of it or contributing to that thing, either by volunteering or doing something, you know, I found my pieces together, and then I was able to mold into this. So very straight way, I would say that my bad experiences have really been my inspiration and my motivation and my drive, like trying to, you know, the fact that you don't want to look like the family you're coming from.
I hear you, bro. I hear you.
And then you just don't want to be as messed up as where you're coming from. And then you just, you know, every day trying. And then because, I mean, you know, I've not always been in Lagos. I grew up, I'm Ibadan born and bred. So, I mean, unlike people who grew up in Lagos, that you have at least opportunities, you know, somehow. I'm not saying you're so in abundance there, but in Ibadan, as a guy who grew up in the realms of Idiakwe of Ibadan, you really don't have, I don't want to say fantastic example, or in terms of global standards, right? You might just have, you know, great people, great elders who are locally, you know, having good characters in the community, but in terms of, you know, going very farther globally, you really don't have those things. I mean, I was able to, funny enough, at every point I graduated to another level of learning, say maybe from primary school to secondary school, they were always miraculous. Right, it always felt like they were never going to happen, but they actually happened. I never thought I was going to go to university. I never, because saying that to my family who didn't have that, my parents who didn't ever went to any university, would be like, maybe you're just, it's like you're just dreaming. So at every point it happened, it just felt like, okay, I'm the first guy who is doing this thing, and then, you know,
that must feel good.
Yeah, it came with having to break a lot of, break a lot of, should I say chains or stereotypes, because, you know, if you don't have that example in your family, if your parents are actually, you know, a university graduate, you feel like being a university graduate will not really be something that, you know, would shock you or something, because you'd be like, okay, I have But then at every point, it just makes me feel like I'm winning my own battles, even though they are looking small. But then, you know, being a university graduate might not be something so big to somebody else, but I would say that at the point when I did, I feel like, okay, now I think
I've broken this curse. I know, personally, I don't think that trauma bonding is a thing, but I kind of feel like we're going to bond on that because I also came from a family similar to yours. And to be fair, I was also that kid who was always acing. And my escape, and the reason I asked that question was because I can relate. So my escape was reading newspapers. So when all the chaos was happening around me, you would always see me reading newspapers. I would read newspapers to a point where my mother would be screaming my name and I won't answer. Not because I'm not hearing her, but I really want to shut my reality out and just be in that. That was like my little bubble. And I didn't even understand the impact it had until, you know, of course my father would never let us watch certain things. The only thing we're allowed to watch was news, right? So he would call us when it's time to watch news. We'll watch news and go back to bed. That's how stringent he was. And then I didn't even realize what I was in at the time. So I was like, oh, okay, so this person who's reading news, I like the way he's reading it. So I would take the newspapers at the time and stand in front of the mirror and be reading the news.
Yeah, the mirror works like magic.
Oh, listen, that thing is
I mean, look at yourself and just tell yourself, I'm gonna be like that.
Yeah, like
this is it. I mean, rehearse all the things, good things in this life, and then just imagine yourself in that space. The mirror technique works like magic.
Is your dad still alive?
Yes, he is still alive, but now, you know, old age caught up on him, and then he's now more relaxed. Now it's now like trying to did the old work and then make him feel comfortable. Yeah. You know, at some point you feel like, I mean, I'd say that. I mean, my dad is a great man. Outside all of those, you know, other shenanigans, you know, at least, you know, send me to school, even though, but I always, you know, want to debate the fact that fatherhood or parenting is beyond just, you know, sending kids to school, beyond just, you know, giving them food. Because I remember those days, my dad would tell me that, you know, when you tell him, Dad, can you just not do all these things, I beg you, don't, can you stop drinking? And then he'll tell you things like, are you hungry? Did I not give you food?
Like, I've done what I'm supposed like to I'm do. Allow me do mine.
Let me do mine. So, but he didn't probably realize how much effect that thing was causing to us psychologically than the food that it was even giving us or the school that it was sending us to. Yeah. Right? So, till today, I still feel like it's responsible for some of the psychological disorientation of my, you know, other siblings. I mean, it still does me sometimes.
PTSD is a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then every day you look at yourself and you'll be like, because you can't separate yourself from where you're coming from. You can always just say that,
I'll
be better.
Yes.
Right? Because at every point in time, you want to take a great step in your career or do something big, and you look at yourself, I mean, am I really worth it? I mean, that's very
imposter syndrome.
And then inferiority complex just sets in. And then, but then thank God for grace. Thank God for knowing the Lord and all those things. And just tell yourself great things. I can become these things. And then for the tracks of things that you've covered, the successes that they become the boosters to wanting to achieve something greater. Mm. I mean, things greater. I think my dad is still good. My mom is good. Thank the Lord for that. And then we're just, I mean, I'd see somewhere that they said that. If you've talked 30, that you can blame your parents for the things that they didn't do or they did at the time. You start facing your own life at the time. Because, of course, I'm not 30 yet. I'm still under 30. But at the same time, I believe that for me, I am really on the track to acing the future of my dreams.
Yes, and you're doing fantastic, by the way. So let's talk about why you decided to be a technology education expert.
Why? Oh, wow. Okay.
What did you study in school, first of all?
Okay, yeah. I mean, I was this science guy when I was, in secondary school, in high school. But then the feeling that people that were smart should just automatically just go into
sciences.
I mean, today when I think about it, I just like, I think I'm more of an art, you know, student than I would have loved it, right? But then I would still say that those, you know, experiences have formed the, you know, the reality today. And then speaking of technology education for me, I attended a polytechnic. at the time I was trying to get an admission into the university, it wasn't really coming through. My, you know, I think my O level was a little bit delayed, so I had to, you know, the result I had at the time could get me into the polytechnic. So I didn't want to stay back home, so I had to opt in for the polytechnic, and then I was studying computer science. Mm-hmm. Right? Don't forget to retrace my step. I talked about wanting to be a medical doctor because of my mom. Because my mom really, really tried a lot, because having to cope with the kind of father that I grew up with, it can be killing, crazy. So I grew up with this kind of mentality that, I just want to make my mom comfortable. I just want to earn a lot of money that just make my family be in good position, because everything is always like, good things were gonna happen by magic at the time. Ooh. I was growing up. Huh? Right? So, you know, and then the father is a salary earner at the time. Before mid of the month, everything is gone, and then you're looking like, where's the next grace gonna come from? So it was my motivation for wanting to be a medical doctor. And then I also thought that, I think I just had this thing for, because my background, apart from being a very meek kind of person, my temperament, and then this gentle person, but my background somehow now added to the introvertness, I listen to things that are not there. What I mean by that is, I'm a good listener, and then from the things that you tell me, I find my way of listening to the subtext. Right, you know, sharing your story or anything whatever, because I connect more with the things that are maybe emotional. Maybe because of my background, I don't know, but I think it's an addition to that. So because of that, I was this guy who really just wanted to, I just felt like I could, I wanted to make my community feel my impact. I wanted to be that guy, because, your family can be so messed up that you feel like, can we be any good to people? Right? So that was the place of wanting to just make sure that I found every bit. My every bit contributes to making the lives of people, people better. So that's the journey. I've always had that inherent in me. So at the time when I went for computer science, all the old issues, I was acing my classes. my set was really crazy, but I did very good. Then before I finished, I was writing JAMB. In my ending one, I wrote JAMB just to want to meet up with university. Was my goal. I didn't work out. In the second year, it did. So I had not even finished my polytechnic before I moved into university. So I was at the point, I had a semester that was actually coinciding with my first year in the university. So I had to manage both together at the time, even though they said that, it wasn't really that. By rules and regulation of the university, it wasn't. But then I still found my way around it. And God helped me. So the mistake I had at the time, if I knew, I probably would have stuck with my computer science and just continue from there. But then God has a plan, right? That's where I see it. So because I've always wanted to be a medical doctor, at the time, having to get a medical, being admitted in the school to study medical doctor at the time was probably very competitive. And because maybe I thought that maybe I could have another route to getting it. So I felt like if I could do something paramed, right? Maybe. And then you surf the net and you feel like, okay, abroad, if you have anything in paramed, you can actually further in medicine and surgery. So I just thought that maybe I should just find a very easier route to doing it. So at the time, the Federal University of Agriculture they had a College of Biosciences. So you could do things around, anatomy, biochemistry, and all of those things. So I felt like I would do microbiology. So I opted in for microbiology, but they didn't give me microbiology. Yeah, so I made physiology. I made physiology. This time I was even now animal physiology. So it was now more related to vet medicine than this to human medicine. So that was how I found myself in FUNAB and studying animal physiology. But I knew from my 200 level that animal physiology was not for me. Right? And then because I'd spent about a couple of years in the polytechnic, at the time I was in my 200 level, a lot of my friends were already that had the admission at the very onset, you know, were already in their third year or their final year leaving the school. So I felt like, okay, I can't wait. And my course of study was 5 years, even though they told us JAMB letter that it was for 4 years. But they told us it was for 4 years in the brochure, I guess. And then when we got to the school, they are telling us it's for 5 years. So I just feel like, what will I be doing for the next 3-4 years? And then my mates are already maybe planning to leave the school and starting their, you know, their career. So that was how I started just volunteering. So I volunteer for United Nations programs, SDGs, just wanting to, I just feel like whatever it is I'm desiring to do after school, I can as well start now.
Right.
So that was exactly how I started. And then I was volunteering in space. In fact, I would travel. My mom would tell me, are they giving you money in that thing? I would say no. I would still collect tea fare and still go hard in and then volunteer. Sometimes, you know, they wouldn't even pay you. Sometimes you find grace and all those things. But it was volunteering. So it was for the experience. It was for the, you know, mindset of wanting to, you know, make impact. Mm-hmm. You know, you do things like SDGs advocacy, and then you do TEDx, you do, you know, volunteering for TEDx and different other programs, maybe community works and all those things. So that was how I started. So at the time I was leaving school, now before I left school, I founded because I felt like at the time many people were graduating agriculture, but they didn't know exactly where they were headed. Because it's all messed up, because a lot of people at the time who got into studying courses that they didn't like, they just lose so much interest in it. So I felt like, how do you spend the whole 5 years and then you finish school and then that's when you now start thinking of what to do? So I felt like if I could change that from the school, from before people graduate, that would be very great. So I set up, I founded a kind of an agricultural, you know, platform. So I invite speakers who are already doing great in their ecosystem, bring them to school, train them, and that was how I started. So it was so good that we had, people thought that I was going to be maybe an agricultural person after school, but I was doing it for the only thing that I was doing it for was the fact that I just enjoyed people learning. I enjoyed people seeing the things that they've not seen before and being motivated to accomplish those things, or the things that they thought that there was no way for them, they are seeing new light in them and they can actually start a life and they have that clarity. That was really the thing, because at the time I will use my stipends, I will use my little money to organize, because of course you can't bring students together and then you don't give them water or biscuits. It was be my money. You know, at the time I had a shoe that so I could have used this money to buy my shoes. And I just felt like, okay, this is what makes me, you know, excited. So and then the impact that it made, I still have a lot of, you know, because at the time we would have people write feedback how they felt about the event. And when I read those things today, I feel so grateful to God I did those things. Because many of them have moved on from there to, you know, I still have examples of people who have actually, you know, go ahead to having that clarity and doing something great in their space in agriculture. So that was the way I started. But at the time I was getting, I did that for like 2 years, 3 years. At the time I was graduating school, okay, then I went into AgriTech. I was teaching people about greenhouse technology and the likes. So that was my subtle route into tech, you know, driving solutions to problems and all those things. By the time I was leaving school, you know, I now had, because before I left, I used to organize things like how to, you know, your CV, your you know, CV optimization, I mean, CV review, CV crafting. We used to do all those things then. And our host session around business development, you know, how to develop businesses, how to do all those things. So those are the things I've been doing before I left school. At the time I was leaving, then, I don't know if you know Utiva. You know, it's owned by, you know, a great guy called Itai Ogumola. So I'd say that that's my route to joining, to being in the technology education space. So at the time I was leaving, you know, initially I thought I was going to be in HR because I just love people, you know, having to, you know, put people in good condition, making sure that you're caring for their well-being. But I realized that, I mean, sorry to, you know, the HR folks out there, but then it was, for me, I felt it was boring. And because I also felt that I could achieve what I want to achieve without being an HR person. So, and because I had been in the technology kind of space before I left school, I just aligned towards, you know, what we're doing. So at Utiva, what we do is train talent at the time, you know, for the technology ecosystem across different skills. So that was exactly how I started. So, you know, at the time I was in growth, right, leading programs, you know doing sales, you know, and also, but I was at the time just now learning more about myself, what I was passionate about. I'd see myself trying to help people learn, and then I watch my video at the end of the day, I'll be like, guy, there's a passion here. So that was exactly where I started from. And then and the really great, you know, opportunities. I mean, a lot of people's lives have transformed remarkably because of technology education.
Right,
opportunities abroad, the things that, you know, I mean, of course, those days you had either you become a doctor, a lawyer, or, you know,
an engineer
at the time. But now, or a banker. But I mean, about 3-4 years ago, or 5 years, with the advent of understanding technology, you have things like data analytics, data science, product management that people used to really not really pay attention to before. And these things would pay you more than just being a doctor that spent a lot of years in school. So what you just need is maybe a 3-month crash course certification, and you're good at it. So it changed a lot of people's life. And then COVID came. Before COVID, we were having to do physical classes, and then after COVID, during COVID, we moved our classes online, and you could see the power of technology having to drive learning. You don't have to go into the four walls of classroom to before you can learn. You know, it was really interesting and exciting of the kind of opportunities that availed us back then. And then, you know, that was really a very good experience for me. And then from there, I picked up the skills of product management. And then I was able to get my product management role even before I left Utiva, and I was, you know, it was remote. And the whole, you know, interesting thing about having to manage product and then having to work remotely, you know, and all those things, still earn big. Because at the time, you'd be like, because funny enough, when I was leaving school, my mom wanted to just help me, you know, maybe find a slot in a secretariat or something. And then,
they always want to do that.
You know, and just you know, start like working there.
Government work is secured.
I tell you. Girl. And then you'll now be doing level 1, level 2, level 3, and all those things. And then, you know, move past those things. I mean, I had other interests at the time. I had interest in, you know, over the years, I had interest in acting, had interest in music, had interest in venture capitalism, had interest, because in school I was in politics as well. But then I just decided that after school, I just decided to break it down to the number of years I'm going to spend in doing a particular thing and be successful at it, then move on to the next thing. Then that way, be able to combine all these things together at the point.
Right.
So that was exactly how I got into technology education.
That's very interesting. Very interesting story. So you're also a member of Forbes Black.
Yes.
Right. I'm interested in knowing how that happened. Because, I mean, now listening to your story and, you know, just your trajectory in life and where you're coming from and all of that, and, you know, you're a member of Forbes Black. How did Forbes Black happen?
Okay. Forbes Black community is, you know, know, the African community of the Forbes general community. Mm. And then I would say it didn't take really so much. Okay. It's basically from assessing the works that you have done and then just applying, right? And at the time, it takes about, I think, almost a month or thereabout to give you a feedback. So I think it's just by their own assessment to see the works that you've done over the years. Right. I mean, you have your CV submitted, and then, you know, you wait for being picked or not.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. And that's how, when did this happen?
It happened, I think, around September or October last year. September, October last year. Yes.
And how, so what, as a member of Hubslack, what are they expecting from you? What are you supposed to do?
Yeah, that community is, you know, you're supposed to be, I mean, of course, serve the interest of, first, it's a network of professionals across different fields. Mm-hmm. So you have publications you want to share, they give you resources around what is pertaining to your line of work. And then you're exposed to, you know, trends, you know, latest, you know, information as to how you can be relevant in your space. Mm. And at the same time, you are also open to applying for, give publications. If you have quite an interesting publication to make, you also have the opportunity to be one of your writers, and then it's been published to the space. So it's just something that it's a community that helps you to become better, and then, you know, that helps consolidate your expertise in your line of work, and then also showcases you to other professionals or entrepreneurs in the space.
Right. Exactly. Interesting. Okay. So before I know that you have a baby called FoundHub, but before we go there.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to ask someone who is into technology this question, or someone who has expertise, who's an expert in that field. So there's this thing I noticed, and we had a meeting. I think it was a Meta meeting one time for creators, and you know, we had mentioned it, but they were really smart as to their answer. Maybe they thought we're not smart people. I kept quiet. Anyways, so there's this thing I've noticed with the internet,
okay,
especially with Meta, but by Meta I mean Instagram,
yeah,
and Facebook.
Yeah.
And, X. So say for example I want to buy shoes. And I'm honestly I haven't told nobody. I'm just thinking it. I think I need a new pair of shoes. And I just randomly pick up my phone and I go on Instagram. And 20 out of 50 posts
I get it, right?
All shoe or shoe stores.
Yeah.
Before then, I would have said, oh, maybe because you mentioned
send it somewhere.
You said it.
Yeah.
Right? And that made sense to me because, yeah, oftentimes I will say it to my friends or whatever. Or maybe make a phone call and be like, oh, that's true, I need to buy this thing. And then I'll start saying it. But I'm like, oh, yeah, because I said it now, so maybe whatever. But then when I said thinking it and I said seeing it, I thought, okay, what's going on? Are you guys invading our life? So speaking as a technological expert, what is that?
Okay, so in fact, a lot of times, you don't even have to be the one who mentioned that. Even listening to that thing, or even having a contact that probably, you know, searched for that kind of thing on the internet before, you could start finding it on your timeline. Mm. So it's a thing around data, right? Machine learning and artificial intelligence, right? So take for instance, by the time you use your Google, is linked to your email, right? Linked to every other platform, at least. Your email is linked to every other platform, your Instagram and any other platform. Use a search engine, right? Whilst you're doing that, it's tracking your location, right? It's tracking everything about you. And then don't forget, while you were registering, you had all your data, your age, your bio data has been there from the onset. So by the time you are searching, you know, there is a tracker around, you know, data, which means that it's learning your data. Mm. And that's what you call the, you know, complexity around big data manipulations, right? And at the time, once you insert your details, it connects to, before you go to Instagram, let's say you are searching on Google, before you go to Instagram, it's already analyzing all of the, it's already analyzing your history, your search history, and then it's sending information as to exactly what may likely be interesting to you at the time. So by the time you go on another platform, without even...
It's so quick,
right? It's suggesting a whole lot of... Maybe you are looking for you search for sneakers, or maybe you even use your Pinterest and the likes, and then by the time you get to Instagram or your Facebook, in fact, it might not even be sneakers, food, right? Just suggesting. By the time that my... And then from the things that you regularly search, you know, there's, you know, the information around, you know, it processes the data and gives accurate, you know, learning to the machine as to what would be interesting to you per time. So it's the magic around data, science, analyzing your data and learning your history over time, then, you know, suggesting that to you, you know, in your subsequent, you know, interaction with the internet.
It's crazy. Sometimes I don't even, if I'm looking, what's worse is sometimes if I'm looking for, say, I want to get an outfit, I don't even bother searching for, like, stores. I just go to my Explore.
Yeah.
And then I feel like my Explore is, like, everything I like is in my Explore. So once I just go to that search portal, it right. just, I'm just like, brah.
So, and also, each time you click, you like a post, right? Everything that has to be activity on the net. Sometimes you just probably like a sneaker, and then before you know it, it's suggesting a lot of other sneakers to you. So it uses all those triggers from your interactions, your activities. I mean, of course, data is, the internet now is now invading our privacy. You know, there's the good side of it, and there's the, you know, the bad side of it. That's why, you know, the tech space is now, for over the years, now advocating for data privacy and the likes. And then he asks you questions around, do you want this information to be used further? You know, do you want them to have continue to have access to it? You click it. It's a terms and condition. If you don't want it, you drop it. If you want it, then you click it. So once we are doing that regularly, you know that one day they can actually now suggest even a whole you to yourself.
Yes, so
right. So,
I saw a movie yesterday on Netflix. It's called Margo, and it's about basically about artificial intelligence.
Yes.
So she controls the way you have Siri. So she literally controls this house as a smart house,
right?
But she's like an evil AI. So anybody who comes to stay in the, so you had, you know the way you have like shortlets now,
right?
So this one is abroad. So people rent the place, just come chill and everything. It's a really nice smart house, but like when people come there, she kills them before they go. Very evil AI.
Whoa!
Like I watched, I was just like, what? Anything you want, like once you coming. Once you register to come to the to the apartment, she analyzes your data, so she knows everything you like instantly. So once you get there and you enter, she begins to. She's nice to you. She gives you everything you like. Right. If you're into cake, food, BDSM, draw, whatever it is, she just offers you
everything,
and then she will kill you. Very wicked stuff.
There's another movie like that. Social Dilemma. If you've seen it,
no, I haven't.
You know, Social Dilemma is just about, you know, talking about data privacy and the whole, and then it also brought, a lot of insight as to our interaction with the internet,
right,
and then how that all of these things are being manipulated. To, in fact, if you, that's why data AI cannot be. Does not have the capacity to be human in itself,
right?
Because let's say, for instance, you, for every time you use the internet, you search for things that are opposite to what you would have normally searched for.
Right.
It doesn't have the knowledge to know exactly this is not what you like, right? It still only predicts things based on the interaction that you've had over time with the internet.
Really interesting stuff. Okay, so let's talk about Fonthole, right? What is, I feel like from the conversations we've had, I can have an idea, but what is Fonthole? okay. about? And that's like your brainchild,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's definitely my baby. Okay. I would say that...
When was she founded, first off?
2022, October 2022. Yes, October 2022. The journey started with, I mean, for 5-6 years I've been in the space, solving problems around tech education, mm-hmm. you know. Before we had started having communities of learning, you know, we have different platforms. I was offering all these crash courses, Coursera mm-hmm. and the likes. Mm-hmm. But then, being in the business of building a community for learners that makes them feel like, you know, they are being heard, they get real-time feedback and the likes, made me understand that, because at some point I was managing a project, you know, one of the e-learning institutions I worked with, and we had the issue of portfolio management for our students. Mm. We had the issue of the quality of their work, because of course employers are not just looking for those who have learned a skill, but those who have had practice. Right. But then we also know that the startups or the opportunities to be able to practice is not in abundance.
Exactly.
So we had what we call theoretical questions that simulate what an actual
work environment
or work problem Ooh. Would be.
Okay.
So, but we had a problem of, you know, the quality of the work that these people are having to work on. Because, of course, problems know they finish, just like they say. So it means that whatever you're solving today might not be the problem that exists tomorrow.
Mm.
So, but then over time, I realized that we could use the same business case for about, you know, maybe 4 cohorts or thereabout. And then by the time they're trying to get into the market to apply for jobs, they probably might not be speaking to the new reality in the market. Also
part
to
time.
Yeah, part time. Or so to say, the issue of maybe you had a portfolio, in your portfolio you had you know, and something or solution around edtech.
Mm-hmm.
But then by the time, especially for like product management, for example. Mm. So by the time you're now graduating, I mean, you're applying for jobs, except you have one connection or thereabout, because they get to look at the quality of the work that you have done before they can offer you a job.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why over time, realize that, you know, forgive us for, I mean, e-learning institutions. Sometimes we blow the trumpets of those people. I mean, you get 100 people in class and then maybe about 5% of them got a job. What we do is maybe amplify that 5% and then there's still a huge 95% who are still stuck, right? So Fun Hall came to be as a result of, I mean, we're doing a fantastic job, but as a result of wanting to provide more solutions to this problem,
okay.
right? And then there's the part where startups are not, you know, financially buoyant enough to hire, to have experienced hires, I mean, experienced talent. So I'm not advocating for intern being used and not be paid. This
right.
is not what I'm saying.
Right.
This is not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that, you know, it can be a matter of exchange of values.
Mm-hmm.
Because as an intern who is just finishing a course, a program,
mm-hmm.
you're looking for the experience. So at the time, what matters to you most is not even the money. Right? So because from that experience, you can get bigger things.
Mm.
So how, and then startups are also undoubtedly having the issues of having to pay for hires. But of course, don't forget that even if you check it, people, as long as you know what you are doing, these days interns are really super amazing, even than the experienced
the
ones.
That's true.
Because some people could just be experienced hires by just the number of years they've been working
true
and not the quality of what they are doing.
Work,
right?
Yeah.
So and of course I mentioned two problems: the business case quality, mm-hmm. the quality of their portfolio, and then also, I mean, both those are one, and then the fact that interns are looking for experience and startups cannot afford to pay for experienced hires. Then the third one would be that check our school systems, right? We have redundant courses that have been teaching the same curriculum for years. You know, And then people are graduating from these non-conventional spaces, especially the one, and all of these industries have not, I mean, technology hasn't caught up with them yet. Now we have spaces that are being dominated for fintech, you know, e-commerce, they're still growing. Even edtech is still, a lot of, is still very virgin, right? But then we, that brings me back to the first point where people are, the quality of the work people are, I mean, the students are doing. You know, you realize that many people, once they are leaving the school, the program that they are, that they've learned, they are looking for the next available space in terms of, is it fintech? I mean, fintech could really get me the job. A lot of people are building fintech solutions. Let me, you know, get into that space. But then how about if we continue to be in that space, how about the entire, you know, industries like the energy sector, you know, the edtech, the agri-tech? How, what's the evolution or what's the progress that has come to meet those industries, you know, when we talk about technology? And then every year the schools, institutions are you know, producing graduates who are having no clue, almost having no clue of what to do next, right? So I decided that, and at the time, you know, because we understand that there's a lot of opportunities in the fintech space, what we do is that, okay, people should just get into tech, learn this, learn a particular skill, and then people get out, and then the space is now too overpopulated, it's saturated, and then people, a lot of people are product managers on LinkedIn, and they don't even, they've never managed a product before. So how about we start, you know, channeling people's strengths or open people's eyes to other industries? I know it's going to be a lot of work, because how many hospitals are open to hiring a data analyst and pay them 150K? Because they don't even think that they need it. So it will come from a lot of awareness, but we're going to get there. Because what we are trying to do is that if you are graduating from, let's say, the art department from the school, you know, there is, you know, how does tech, you know, solve problem in entertainment? You know, I've had issues of people, you know, our friends, I mean, Emeka, guys in the entertainment industry that, you know, share some stuff, and I start understanding things. I mean, the kind of problems around having to audition and all those things. What are the tech solutions that are available in that makes work easier in the entertainment industry or the movie industry? So instead of having other people just dying hard to want to go to fintech, why not train people to be in all these other industries and give them the quality of work to be able to perform in that space? So that's exactly where Fontwork came in. So we are solving these three problems, and then we know that we're starting with the learning aspect and how to build quality portfolio, but we are growing into you know, having the capacity to be able to solve industry specific, you know, related issues. So that's exactly what Fontwork is
about.
That's
really good. Where you said industry specific issues, because I had a boss that would always, I mean, I trained under her for years, and she said, Charles, always find the naira, right? And then as you spoke as an Igbo boy one and as a protege of hers, I'm now thinking, okay, so you want me to, this is what I want to do, I want to be into fintech, and now you're trying to convince me through Front Hall that, listen, there are you know, other green areas, there is agri-tech, there's this, there's that. Or there are industry-specific problems. Case study would be the entertainment industry, where you could do this. And I'm thinking, where is the money?
Yes, right. That's the truth. But then let me say this: that you know, profit follows impact. Right.
True.
Yes, and then what we also know that people have their area of strengths and weaknesses. You know, would you rather play to your strength and gain profit from there? Or, because you have a lot of people that, you know, they're attending interviews, they're just not picking you. Maybe it's from the passion or the quality of your work or the fact that you're just not, you know, giving them that vibe that you can do the job. But if you have somebody finishing from the heart, or maybe originally is much, I mean, because the truth is that there are going to be clarity sessions, you know, info sessions around the industries that are available. Don't forget, we are moving there because people need to start. Because look at the developed world. I don't want to say we are underdeveloped, because they say that word is not.
It's not world. It's okay, but it's okay.
Developing, right? We would see that they play more to their strength.
Yeah, they do.
They find their talent right from their cradles. Mm-hmm. They find their talent and then they play much to it. And that's why they move faster than we do. Mm-hmm. Somebody is here, is still in his 20s, struggling at something. Why not find where you play, you know, you play well to, right? And there are some people that are good with, like I said, they will say that engineers are not great CEOs. Mm-hmm. They understand the technology, but then they probably don't understand how to manage the business, right? So which means that playing to the strengths will actually now be something of a conversation. Because it makes us move faster. Somebody who has already studied agriculture in school, you know, is likely to do more than somebody who studied something else and trying to learn as a product manager to go and fit in agricultural space.
I hear you.
As a nurse, somebody who is a registered nurse or is a medical doctor is likely to be a better product manager in the, you know, health tech industry than somebody who came from agricultural background and trying to learn product manager to become, to go and be a fit in health tech.
Mm, okay.
I'm not saying that there are no exceptional talents. I'm only saying that looking at the majority, I mean, the data from the very bigger perspective, I believe that by the time we start channeling people's strength towards the solution that they are providing, you know, it helps us move faster. And that's the solution that we are trying to, you know, bring on board with FundHall.
Great. All right. And on that note, I would like to say thank you for coming to our TEDx session. Because if I leave back, so it would go on and on and on.
Right. It's been an interesting
conversation, to be honest. But yeah. Quick one. Say, for example, someone who's watching this or listening to this wants to, you know, has heard you sell FundHall and is like, okay, I think this is interesting. I want to, you know, be part of it. What are the processes like?
Okay, right. I mean, because we're just starting out, we definitely are, you know, accessible via our social media pages. Mm-hmm. Just search for FundHall or FundHall Tech. And then, of course, you know, we also host regular info sessions. That's where we start from. You know, you speak with an advisor, right? And then we take it off from there.
Okay, great. And your personal Instagram is?
My personal Instagram, Body Max Akinyemi. Okay. On LinkedIn, Body Maxwell Akinyemi.
Body Maxwell Akinyemi.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming. This Thank was very so much, expository. And I learned a lot. Like I told you, I'm clueless. I just sat here and I listened to the sensei talk to us. So thank you for coming.
Thank you so much, Charles, for having me. It's been a very interesting. I wouldn't know how long we've spoken, but then
it's a long time.
It's a long time.
It's a long time, but it is what it is.
All right, now thank you so much for having me. It's been interesting. Cheers.